Welcome to Coffee and Catastrophe, Writers on a Caffeine High, Season 2, Episode 7, Editing.
What? That's it?
Yeah, just editing. It's cut down, it's precise, it's what I mean to say, editing.
Well now, wait a minute, you're usually the one that comes up with all these cutesy little titles for our episodes.
You know what I did?
And it's just editing.
You know what I did?
What?
I edited it.
You're so full of it.
I try. I'm William Brian Johnson, author of Hell to Pay and The Dark Cry of Aristide.
And I am D.A. Bale, author of the Deepest Darkness series and the Bartender Babe Chronicles, and eventually, someday, coming soon, probably not for a while, my space opera series, The Outliers.
So. If you want to see our adventures, you can check me out on fatherthunder.blogspot.com.
And you can check out my writing on dabellpublishing.blogspot.com.
So, editing.
Well, one of the things that people struggle with is, you know, should I hire an editor to do my work? You know, I can't really afford an editor. They're awfully expensive. You know, what about self-editing and all this kind of stuff and everything? And so, we just thought, as part of our steps to publishing, baby steps to publishing that we talked about, we touched a little bit on editing, but we kind of wanted to go into it a little bit deeper for those of you who may not be aware of exactly what types of editing is out there, because I've actually done some editing before for people's manuscripts, and one of the things that I did is I edited someone's manuscript that they thought had already been edited before, and actually what they had was a proofread, and they paid a lot of money for a very simple little proofread.
Wow.
Instead of an editing, a true, you know, full-scale editing job. It's what they thought they were getting.
Did you make the pages bleed?
Oh, you know I did. That's what I do best.
Did they ever talk to you again?
Oh my gosh, they were so appreciative.
Oh, really?
Yes. They appreciated it so much, all the different things. They were just like, oh my gosh, you've helped my story, you know, be 10 times better.
I know there's been a few pages you've given back to me that were more red than black. And
black or white?
Yeah, I just about went home and wept, but, you know.
Oh, hey, you know, turnabout's fair play. You've gotten me, too.
Over time, it makes us stronger
writers. Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I think the important thing is to have that trust built with somebody, too.
Yeah.
Knowing that they know what they're talking about, one, and two, they're trying to help you, not, because I've dealt with some people before that provided a critique, and it was just like, you know, one, you knew they didn't really know what they were talking about, or, you know, two, they didn't understand the story, or, you know, three, you just had absolutely no trust in them.
I remember early on when we were in the writer's group, and we were kind of going through different people, there was somebody that told me that she felt my horror novel was a comedy, and it was like The Mask.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about.
And I remember just looking at her going, you truly do not get my writing. And I don't think she came back after that.
I think I know who you're talking about, though,
It was so far off mark of what my novel was after she read a little bit of it.
Oh, it absolutely has no humor to it whatsoever. If it has any humor at all,
sarcasm.
It's a very dark.
Yeah, well, it's dark humor like me, but.
Well, yeah, but I mean. Oh, it's definitely not mask-ish in any way, shape, or form.
No. Not slapstick by any means.
Right. Okay, so we kind of wanted to just introduce the different types of editing, and to some things that you can do, and some examples of things that we've done before to self-edit.
Okay.
One of the things that you really have to make sure that you do when you're looking for an editor, that someone that you're going to actually pay to look at your work. You need to understand the types of editing.
The one thing I might bring up is editing is one of the few things that over and over I've heard people say, buy. Pay for an editor. Get a good edit of your manuscript before you send it to anyone.
But see, editing is not the same for different things. Like this one guy, he thought he was paying for a full-scale developmental edit, realized, no, all he got was a proofreading, and he paid through the nose for that. So there are some things that you need to look out for when you're looking at editors that you're going to pay to look at your work.
So what are the different types of editing?
Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay. I'm going to hang out.
I'm going to stop that. Okay. One of the things that an editor that you're actually going to pay, one of the things that they should offer to you free of charge so that you can get an idea of what kind of service level they're going to provide to you, They should always provide you a free sample edit of the first 5 to 10 pages of your manuscript. You send that to them, they send it back to you with their edits, and then you can get a general idea of what it is that they're going to provide and if what they're charging you is going to be worth it.
Okay? So, just a question, do a lot of editors mm-hmm. do that?
They should.
They should.
Okay. A lot of editors do that. That's something I do. Mm-hmm. Anytime I've ever edited anybody's work and it's somebody that I'm brand new working with, I always give them a free edit of the first few pages of their manuscript, send it back to them. That way they can see what they're going to be getting from you. Because if it's just a basic proofread and I'm charging them $20 an hour, you know, that's kind of ridiculous.
So what you're saying is if I found enough editors to do that, I could get my book edited for free.
Okay, Brian, don't play the system here. Okay, so when we talk about the different methods that an editor usually gets paid, they either charge you by the hour, by the word, or by the page, okay? And the thing is, don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask for references. If you ask questions of someone and they don't get back with you in a very timely manner, you're probably not going to work well with that person.
Well, I would almost think that some people would want to have almost an online resume of it mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. can just click on and see, oh, they've done this number of books and this is what their people have said.
Well, but you don't always want to just base it upon that.
That's true.
You want to make sure that you're asking questions. You want to make sure that you have a good understanding of what the different edits are like mm-hmm. so that you know exactly what you're getting and what you're paying for. This is a big thing, and I see this all the time. Most editors, you pay through PayPal.
Okay.
Okay, but there's an option on PayPal called Friends and Family. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. If you have somebody who asks you, an editor that asks you to pay them through the Friends and Family option on PayPal, what that does is there is no fee associated with the work that they're doing for you. Mm-hmm. Like, PayPal will charge, when I do an editing job, they take like 2% off the top of what I am getting paid from somebody. Uh-huh. I don't charge my client that. That's just my cost of doing business for the convenience of using PayPal. Okay, but if you're using the Friends and Family option, if you have an editor that wants to use the Friends and Family option on you, they don't have that fee then on their end. But the only problem is you don't have any recourse against them if for some reason they
found out they didn't really edit it.
Right. If you got back some, you know, if you paid for something and you got back something else, or you paid them a portion up front, and then they never provided you back with your edited manuscript, mm-hmm. Then you can go through PayPal and you can dispute the charge, and they have so much time in which to offer a rebuttal or offer evidence of the service that they provided you, and if they don't do so in a timely manner or legitimately according to PayPal's regs, then you get your money back.
Wow.
PayPal automatically deducts their money from their account and then credits you back.
To you.
Huh. I've only had to use that one time on a marketing company that I used, that I paid for a service, and then they didn't end up running my book.
Oh, wow.
And then they were trying to tell me, oh, no, it ran. And I'm like going, no, I have it right here. Shows that it did not run. I have your website here. It's not showing up on your website. None of this and everything. So I had to go through and file a claim, against them through PayPal, since I'd used PayPal, and then was able to get my money back from them that way.
Huh.
So, never, ever, ever have an editor tell you, or anyone, cover artist, whatever, to pay them through the Friends and Family option through PayPal.
Unless
always,
it's actually a friend.
Unless it's actually a very trustworthy friend or family, and you're not paying for a service from that person. Because then you're getting into tax season, you know, issues and stuff like that of deductibility. Mm. You know, it just keeps it as an arm's length transaction that way, too.
Do you deduct on your taxes?
Do I what?
Your
claim
fees?
My fee? I deduct my fees? Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I always deduct fees. I use every deduction I possibly can. Because I always have to pay in, even though I don't make very much money. Anyway. So, getting back to the types of edits, mm-hmm. okay, do you know what they are, Brian?
No, we'll see what they are. Huh, What would be developmental?
Developmental edits. That's something that I specialize in.
Okay.
A developmental edit is going to be a very detailed, very intensive, and the most expensive type of editing service that you can order. This is a very good option for newbie writers.
Okay.
Okay. That can afford it. Because it focuses on problems with the structure of your story, the organization of your story.
Plot.
Cohesion, consistency, plot, continuity issues. A lot of times they will, and this is going to be different with each editor, but one of the things that I do is I make notes along the manuscript. I use the track changes function, and I make notes along the manuscript. I don't change the manuscript itself. I actually mark it in the manuscript, and then I make a notation of, this is what I would suggest changing, because it's their manuscript.
Right.
It's just like anything else that we talk about all the time. It's their decision whether or not they want to actually take the suggestions that you are offering, the professional suggestions that you're offering, and use them or discount them. So I never actually change the manuscript itself, but I always put in, you know, I always mark and I always put in a suggestion of what I think they should do.
Which, getting a little bit out of this and going into word processors, which we've talked about maybe doing a further episode on, one of the things I liked about Microsoft Word is that you can track changes. And if somebody does go in and change it, you can actually go back and compare the way it
you
was
had it.
To the way, yeah,
to what they actually did. Yeah, but, you know, a lot of editors, they'll remove sentences, they'll restructure them, they'll add sentences, they may take out whole paragraphs or move whole paragraphs around. They do a lot of condensing, a lot of rewriting, expanding maybe, you know, marking where this thought doesn't feel completely fleshed out. I would suggest, you know, spending some time on the transition between this paragraph and that paragraph, or this scene and that scene, you know, so that there's better continuity, better flow between the scenes or
better
between
story.
The paragraph. Right. Better understanding for the reader and stuff like that.
I kind of used to do that in the group, and sometimes I would try to make everybody's story darker.
But so, you know what? That is actually a good thing, and that kind of gets us into the whole beta reader thing, because you always brought a whole different element, a whole different look at somebody's story, and a lot of times that could end up giving you an idea for maybe a subplot or something that you could do with the character, something you could put them through, which I love to put my characters through, all sorts of crap.
It's a romance. I'm not using the possessed doll idea.
Oh my gosh, unless you're going to have a romance with the possessed doll, but let's not get into that. See? You bring up these interesting things and my brain runs off with it.
Wait a second. The last blurb one. What was that? You had the story. What was the story?
Oh, it was the whole thing with his wife had killed herself and she was coming after him because he was trying to move on with his life or something. Yeah.
David must find a way to excise her ghost before she becomes the doll. That's like an Annabelle series 14.
Goodness. Wait. What was that one with the Chucky? Series. That makes me think of the Chucky series. I never saw any of those. No, thank you. The previews on television were bad enough.
They were pretty laughable. I mean,
really? Were they?
Yeah,
they looked freaky.
Most of the Chucky stuff was pretty tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, okay. Well, it was freaky looking to me. So anyway, that's basically, in a nutshell, what developmental editing is. It's your most detailed, your most intensive, your most expensive type of editing.
So what would a copy edit be?
A copy edit, and sometimes people mistake this. There's also something called line editing. But line editing is something that you don't really see a lot of in novel writing editing, because it's really more of a step between developmental editing and copy editing. Copy editing is going to focus very much on grammar usage, focusing on repetition and overused words.
Straight from
making
the old
suggestions.
William and Stunk
yes,
manual.
Stunk.
I actually read that through one time.
Oh, really?
Oh, that was terrible.
Oh, gosh, I bet. But it helps to identify, say, words that you've misused, like sleight of hand versus sleight of hand, and that's S-L-I-G-H-T versus S-L-E-I-G-H-T. And a lot of people mess that one up. I've seen that a lot.
You know what? I might just throw this out there. I hate to promote somebody else, but there was somebody I used to listen to called The Grammar Girl.
Oh, yes.
And The Grammar Girl podcast, and she had a blog, and she had little snippets of daily things that would come out. She even ended up writing a book on it.
Oh, really?
And cool. I ended up putting that book in my classroom because it was a very good grammar book.
Huh. Okay.
So, just a product out there if you feel that you're writing maybe a little weak in the grammar market. Another one, Strunk, William and Strunk, was an old book that they used mainly in journalism.
Oh, yeah.
It tends to rotate a little bit more towards newspapers, but it was one that also worked on proper grammar.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you're looking at, you know, sentence structure, your tense, your consistency in style. Like, if you have on one page, you have five as a number versus the other times you've had numbers, you've actually written them out, like F-I-V-E.
Which I think I always went with the newspaper rule on that.
Which was always,
Nine? Or is it two?
Yeah, one through nine.
One through nine, it's written out, but anything above nine is the actual numerical.
Which is different, though, in novel writing. In novel writing, a lot of times you either see it one way or the other. Which, in most cases in novel writing, I usually see it as written out.
It's kind of like the Oxford comma.
Oh, gosh, don't get me started on the Oxford comma. Or, you know, transpositions. You know, I see transpositions a lot, too, with the copy editing aspect. You usually will catch those. It's just kind of like you're reading through the story, and you're just looking for those types of mistakes, those types of overusages, those consistency aspects.
So what is an example of a transposition?
I see a lot of times where they'll get like the word and or but or something like that. It's like their fingers are going faster than their brain or something like that, and they'll get one word before the next one, and it'll say something like, you know, Sally came up behind her and jumped on her back, you know, something like that. Instead, it'll say Sally came up behind and her jumped on her back, you know, something like that. So transpose the words there, and so a copy editor will actually find those types of things.
Find them, pick on them.
Hopefully a good copy editor will do that.
So isn't that all proofreading?
No, not necessarily. Proofreading is going to be your lightest amount of editing and your cheapest amount of editing. Proofreading is basically focusing on errors of capitalization, punctuation, spelling, and word usage, like the infamous your, there, and there. And if you don't know what that is,
Utes.
No, not utes. Use. but like, you know, the conjunction your versus your, meaning your ownership of something.
Versus you are.
Right, exactly. Same with there, and there. You've got there, your conjunction, or your contraction. Excuse me, I think I said conjunction last time. Your contraction of they are versus their possessive versus their as in a place, you know. You also got your two and two, all that kind of stuff and everything there too. But so, that's typically what a proofreader will be looking for.
And generally, if it's your first novel, I know you're not a great published person and you don't have a ton of money, but generally it's a good idea to just have somebody look at it.
And there are some things that you can do if you don't have the money. There are some things that you can do to help along your own editing process. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about before, we've been part of a critique group at one time. We both went to a writing class at our local community college over here, and we all took a writing class together, and then we created a critique group out of that.
Right.
And what was it, like an eight-week class, six-eight-week class,
six
or something
to
eight-week
like that?
Class,
yeah. And it was a non-credit, just
It was like a community enrichment type course. But that's a great way to
meet other people.
Meet other people, like-minded writers, hopefully, and getting a bunch of people from a different background. I mean, we had someone, and this is what surprised me, is the fact that I had previously always been a good proofreader, good editor and stuff like that of people's work in college. When I would, you know, they would ask me to go over and read over their term papers and things like that. And so I would do a lot of that when I was in college. And I did a lot of writing in my corporate life.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what I was doing in novel writing.
Yeah, that writing is so different.
Yeah, so very different.
It's kind of like me in academic writing. It's such a different animal. And it takes a while to get back to your voice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was interesting because, and I'm gonna have a shout out here to Julie.
Hi, Julie.
But Julie took the class with us at the community college, and then she joined the critique group that we put together after that. And it surprised me when I found out she's actually an educated, you know, active editor of a newspaper. She's very well versed, very well trained in newspaper, magazine article writing. And yet, here she was, a writer by trade, taking a class on novel writing. But I understand now why she was there, because novel writing is its own completely different bird from any other type of writing.
Journalism or newspaper writing, it's totally different.
Yeah, just like writing a novel reporting. And writing a screenplay are two different types of writing. Mm-hmm. You know, writing a novel versus writing a poem. But each writing discipline has its own set of rules and its own set of parameters.
And sometimes it's on voice.
Very much so. And we'll get into that in another episode sometime. finding your own voice and everything. But, you know, that was something that we did early on in our writing careers. But
We broke a lot of teeth in that.
Yes.
Yeah,
we were in that group for like 10 years or more.
Yeah, and I mean, it really showed me how to become a better writer.
And that's a better novel writer.
Better novel writer. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, too, is if you're not showing your writing to other people, show your writing to other people. Get it out there.
And
don't
not
exist
just,
in a vacuum.
Not just family and friends.
Go beyond.
Yeah. But
give it to somebody that might enjoy it and might truthfully tell you they hate it. Or the softest version of that is, it's just not my thing.
There you go. But let's say that you have had now a lot of experience. You have a good background in knowing what to look for in a novel and everything. There are some things if you decide you want to self-edit, and I always recommend doing this regardless of whether you send your manuscript out to a paid-for editor to get a professional edit done. I always recommend doing this first, just to lessen the amount of editing that it's going to cost you for the other professional to do. There are some things that you can do to self-edit once you've finished your manuscript. One thing I always say is, put it away, just like we talked about on blurbs last time.
Psychic distance.
Yes. Get away from your manuscript for a few weeks, a few months, however long that you need to get your head completely out of it. Don't get your first draft or your second draft done and then immediately jump back into editing. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to take time to get your editor hat off, to take the writer hat off, and to put the editor hat on.
Different drafts of the brain, or different parts of the brain.
And just to get your head out of that story and away from those characters.
Yeah. And I've also found, what do they call them, the circadian rhythms, that, you know, there's certain times of the days that you're good at things. I've always found early in the morning and late at night I am great at writing, but there is something about the 10 o'clock a.m. hour that a switch flips in my head, and I can edit very well. I can't write very well after that, but I can edit very, very well. And then about 2 o'clock, I can start writing again, but then about 5, that switches again, and I go back to editing.
See, I can't do anything early in the morning. I'm a zombie in the morning.
There was an interesting discussion a while back, I don't remember if it was a blog or not, but talking about writing in the morning because your editor's asleep. And that critical part of your brain that's constantly going, this isn't any good, stop writing, stop doing this, is actually still asleep.
See, and I think that's part of the problem that I have sometimes is, you know, since I do a lot of editing, not as much as I used to, but since I have that strong editor in my head, I find myself editing as I go, or my editor is screaming at me as I'm trying to just write in writing mode, and it really slows me down.
We've talked about NaNoWriMo before, and one of the exercises in the NaNoWriMo book is you jail your editor.
You jail, yes, I remember
that. You're getting
that.
Rid of them for 30 days, uh-huh. You're putting them away so you can write freely, and fortunately, I still don't do that. Even if I try.
Uh-huh. Same here.
And I think we've even talked about websites like Write or Die that has the kamikaze function.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes! That if writing, it'll erase everything.
Yeah, if you take too long, it starts erasing your work.
Uh-huh.
And you just have to write.
That freaked me out when you showed that to me.
That was an awesome thing.
Okay, so let's say that it's been a few weeks. In my case, I usually take at least a month, sometimes two off. Before I get back into editing that. Doesn't mean I'm not writing anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I usually have gone on to another project.
I took a couple years off, Ariston.
Oh, I know you did. I thought you were never going to get back to that puppy. I'm so glad to see you really getting into that and everything's gelling together really well. So, there are several things then that you can do to self-edit. And you want to be looking at all the different things that you would be looking at for developmental, you know, does this flow well into that? You want to look at, does this make sense? Do I need to spend a little bit more time fleshing that scene out a little bit more? This sentence makes sense, you know, kind of like a copy editor would do. You know, and oh my goodness, you know, I've you know, used a colon or a period instead of a comma here. I do that sometimes a lot in my dialogue. I'll put a period instead of a comma before I put the dialogue tag in there. So just kind of, you get to kind of know the things to be watching for. But first of all, you want to edit it on your computer. You write your manuscript usually on your computer. I use Microsoft Word. I know we're going to kind of get into some of that at some point.
I do too.
Uh-huh. For now. So then you want to go through the whole thing and get as much done as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. That may take you a week, 2 weeks, a month. Whatever you do. And usually each edit period goes a little bit faster, I think, I've found.
If you're self-editing, get away from everything.
Yeah.
Put your phone away. Put the computer away. And unplug your internet.
Oh, see, that's my problem. I start going and checking things.
Yeah. Well, my problem is, you know, I have kids or dogs or something. Mm. And sometimes I've found going to a coffee shop or going somewhere to where you can be totally ignored and taking it and just diving deep into it. But get out of your typical place. I mean, you can even go to the library. They even have rooms that you can use for like conference rooms.
Off.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And go in there and just do it.
Yeah.
But limit the amount of distractions that you have around you. Even be careful listening to music. Because
yeah,
even that
I can't
can
listen
sometimes
to music in editing mode.
Yeah, I can do it while I'm writing and I love doing it, but I need stone cold silence when I'm editing.
When you're editing. Yep. Yeah. Same here. And then the next thing that I typically do is I will take my manuscript and then I will crunch it down into I have the old Mobi Pocket program, and I'll make it into a Mobi file, and then I'll go through and I'll read it on my Kindle. You know, if you've got a Kindle, a Nook, or your iPhone, or whatever you want to do, find an electronic device to read it on, because it's really amazing. I mean, it just, I can't tell you by that point in time how many times I've gone over it and edited it on the computer.
I've never done that before.
It is amazing what I catch.
My big next step, and I think this goes back to me doing academic writing, is to print it out.
Mm-hmm.
And to really go through it with a pen.
Mm-hmm. Since I read a lot on my e-reader nowadays, that has been a very helpful tool for me.
Hmm.
And I'll have my e-reader out, and I'm just, you know, around the corner here from my office, I have a little couch, and I'll just lay there on the couch with my e-reader, and I'll just be reading through everything, and I'll have my manuscript opened up on my computer in here.
And that way you can run in, and if you find a mistake, just change it right off.
If I find it, I come in, and I immediately change it, and then I go back, sit back down, or lay back down, whatever I'm doing, and I go through, and I continue reading. And I might even do that two times. I might read through it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do usually, I don't do it so much anymore because it's a real drain on paper and ink.
Oh, yeah.
And I have found that for me, reading it on the e-reader is a great tool.
See, I'm still a paper slave. I need to see mine in paper.
And a lot of other people are like that, too. So, you know, whether you do it before or after or not at all or whatever, especially when you're first self-editing, it's a good idea to print it out.
Yep.
Double-spaced, a nice size font that's legible and everything. You want it double-spaced, and I know that's going to take up more paper.
Why?
Because you want lots and lots of space for all those notes that you're going to write to yep. yourself while you're going through on the paper.
Right.
And then what I do, my very last step in my self-editing process is I will go through and I'll create a proof through CreateSpace of my actual book. I'll have my cover and everything all ready to go. I'll create a proof, and then I will, you know, because you can create the proof and just leave it up on CreateSpace where it's not live on any site or anything like that for purchase or anything like that. And you can leave it up there indefinitely in review mode for as long as you want to.
I'm trying to think with Amazon's publishing arm, the one that they actually
made. The KDP?
Made.
Yeah. I don't use KDP.
Right, but
print.
I think when I first did Held to Pay, when I re-released it under myself, I think I ended up printing one off and I looked through it as a book.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Get yourself a proof copy of your actual book and then just don't approve it yet until you're ready to go and actually release your manuscript and release the file and everything like that. Because a lot of times I'll go through and change my CreateSpace interior proof a couple of times before I actually finally get it the way I want it. Because maybe I'll read through the book itself, the proof that I have, proof copy, and I'll read through it once and I'll catch some stuff and then I'll fix those and everything and then re-upload something and then maybe I catch something else on the second read-through. I read through, oh my gosh, and this is the problem that you'll have self-editing. You'll read through and read through and read through and read through so many times.
Well, and don't you become sometimes numb to it?
You kind of become a little bit numb to it.
Yeah.
Which then my last step, because of that, because I don't want to miss something, that I inevitably will miss something, I will send out to a very small team of beta readers that I have. They know exactly, if you choose to use beta readers to help you with your editing process, your beta readers, you need to give them a very specific list of what you're looking for. You want them to keep written feedback per chapter when they're reading through your book. You want them to notate any misspellings, you know, any errors in punctuation, notate sections, you know, if something stops them. And that's one thing I always say, and we've always talked about this too. This, reading through this, this stopped me. This, when I got to this section, it took me out of the book. Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So you want to give your beta readers good instructions, good detail, and then, you know, especially if you're starting out and you have a small team of beta readers, you know, it might be friends and family and stuff like that.
I don't have a team of beta readers.
We'll get you a team of beta readers. But you may have some beta readers that don't necessarily provide you with good feedback. You may have some beta, you want beta readers who are going to provide you with detailed,
right,
good feedback, written feedback per chapter to help you find errors. And it's just amazing. I have 3 or 4 beta readers on my team. I would recommend not having more than 6 beta readers, because that means every time you get instructions back from a beta reader, you have to go back through your manuscript and make corrections and stuff.
Do you give them a set time to have it back by?
Yes. That's really important. Give them enough time, you know, because they may have some things going on in their life, and maybe this particular book, they can't get back with you. They're not going to be able to get back with you.
What is your normal amount of set time?
I usually like to provide them with, like, 3 weeks.
Okay.
I don't like to give them less than that, because I'm usually going to be on, you know, a schedule that I'm trying to keep, too. And I'll usually touch base with them when I start seeing my beta readers send in their information.
That's right. Joey got it back where you
Well, then, you know, I'll kind of keep track of them. Usually about a week out or so from when I need it back, I'll start just sending a little reminder. Hey, just touching base with you, seeing if you've had a chance to read through this yet. You know, I'm starting to get some feedback and everything, and just wanted to make sure that you were, you know, whether or not you were still going to be able to participate.
Right.
But again, it's a cheap way to get some feedback, but you're not really going to get the same type of feedback as what you would get from a developmental editor. Mm-hmm. You would more going to be getting back more along the line of proofreading type stuff.
Right.
And maybe a little bit of, depending upon how good your beta readers are, you might possibly get some, you know, moments where they're just like going, hey, I had a question about this. This didn't seem quite right. This didn't feel like the character, especially if they've been following along in your series and they've read several of your books. So, but that's generally what you want to look for when you're looking at editing, the different types, again, developmental copy and proofreading if you're paying someone. And then if you're self-editing, the different steps. Oh, sorry. We got a sleepy Brian over here. But the different steps that you want to go through if you're going to self-edit. And again, I always recommend self-editing, even if you're going to pay an editor to go through it at least once.
So if somebody's looking for an editor, where is a good, is there a good site?
Again, I've never really paid someone to actually go through and edit, because I usually do that for other people, and I've had enough people around me that know what they're doing to beta read for me and stuff like that. Typically, there's KBoards has an area on their site that has a bunch of people that post their jobs.
And I think we've talked about editors and predators before,
yes,
that if there's any businesses out there that may not be in the writer's best interest, sometimes there are posts there regarding them.
I know some people have said they've found people on Fiverr. I'm not recommending or dissuading anyone from using Fiverr, but that's kind of going to be getting what you pay for.
What is Fiverr?
I don't know. I've never used it, but apparently, like, everything costs $5 on there or something like that. And yeah, it's a whole nother thing.
And if you want a $5 edit, we can give you a $5 edit.
Yeah, exactly. Really, it's going to be a matter of do your homework, ask other writers that you know of that have used paid editors, and always make sure that an editor is going to provide you with a couple of pages free to show what kind of an editing job that they will do for you.
And like we've said before you pay any money, do the research.
Mm-hmm. Always research. Ask questions. Again, goes back to that thing. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask for references. And then do your homework and actually contact those references.
All right. I think we're done.
Okay.
Stick a fork in it.
Oh, boy. That just brings up all sorts. Every time you say that, it brings up all sorts of weird thoughts in my head, and it's getting late, so that's bringing up really weird thoughts.
Hotel
in my
California?
Head. Oh, it's no.
Little piggy on the table that just won't. I forget what the song is, but or the line, but it's. They stab it with their steely knives and they just can't kill the beast. There it is. All right, I'm William Brian Johnson.
And I am D.A. Bale.
Welcome to the Hotel California. You can always check in, but you can never leave. Take care.
Oh, gosh. We'll see ya.